listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
Greetings, everybody. Merhaba salam. Welcome to the Cranky Middle Manager Show. Today, we are going to take a look at a topic that a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about, but we don't tend to get down into the specifics. I am talking about trust. What is it? Why does it matter? How do you actually go about building such a thing? We're going to talk to David Horsager in just a couple of minutes. I, of course, am your humble servant, Wayne Termel. Thanks for joining us. And you'll notice that I used a different greeting today, merhaba salam, assuming my pronunciation is even remotely correct. It's hello in Turkish, an odd choice perhaps, until you realize that this week's show is dedicated to Kemankesh Mustafa Pasha, who was the Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire in, the middle 1600s or so. Now, if you're thinking, oh great, Wayne's reading a big-ass book about the Ottoman Empire and he's going to bore us with it, well, you're partly right. Basically, vizier is a fascinating position. The vizier basically ran the country for the Sultan and demanded absolute trust. When you had the trust, the world was your oyster. When you lost the Sultan's trust, well, just ask Mustafa, who was doing just fine under Sultan Murat IV, until the new Sultan, Ibrahim, came in. Suddenly, the guy who was trusted with everything was not trusted at all, and it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that things weren't working out. In fact, Mustafa actually submitted his resignation 4 times, and each time was refused. The Sultan then had him executed, which seems like a lot of trouble to go to in order to avoid paying a severance package, but there you have it. Interestingly enough, our boy Mustafa did not suddenly become bad at his job or less capable, but the role demanded trust that he didn't have. It's important to remember one other important thing here. Mustafa was mostly right, and Sultan Ibrahim turned out to be a raving idiot who almost lost the entire empire, but he was the boss, and Mustafa paid the price anyway. See if that sounds at all remotely familiar. Something to think about as we think about trust today. This is kind of an odd segue, but I'd like to think that over the years, I've earned your trust as someone who understands what's going on in the workplace. Well, my company, GreatWebMeetings.com, offers training to companies and individuals all over the world in how to use today's web presentation platforms to manage, train, and work with your teams and your customers. We offer training in leading effective virtual meetings, how to create and manage remote teams, as well as web presentation basics, which is essentially how the heck do you present using tools like WebEx, GoToMeeting, and the like. You can have us work with your organization, get the nice lady in HR or training to talk to us, or you can just sign up for the events on our webpage. If you go to www.greatwebmeetings.com, check out the events tab. Every month there are webinars that individuals can sign up for. You can also get twice a week tips and information on managing remote teams at our new blog, theconnectedmanager.com. It's a co-production with Management Issues. We really hope that it becomes the most trusted source for information on the way we work today. And if you haven't checked it out yet, please do, theconnectedmanager.com. Now, the quote of the week is from the hymn writer Isaac Watts. He said this, "Learning to trust is one of life's most difficult tasks." True enough, and it ain't gotten any easier in the last 300 years or so. Hopefully, we are going to learn how to build trust today. Here's today's conversation. On the Cranky Middle Manager Show this week, an important conversation, I think, as opposed to the drivel we usually spill. But it's an important conversation. We are talking to David Horsager. He is the author of The Trust Edge, How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results, Deeper Relationships, and a Stronger Bottom Line, all things devoutly to be wished. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Wayne?
I am ridiculously well today, actually. Trust is really an important component, obviously, of building teams, of working together with people. It's one of those soft, mushy words that we like to throw around. Let's start with a working definition. What the heck is trust?
Well, I'm going to respond twice here. Number one, I define trust as a confident belief in, a confident expectation. Some people kind of simplify it and they say, oh, it's just honesty or it's just character, it's just whatever. And, you know, when I started the research, I kind of thought of it more simply. And then I saw, you know, there's a lot of pieces to building trust as a manager, as a salesperson, as a leader. And, you know, interestingly, when we saw people do those things, the bottom line went up. And it really, you know, I think it's, you know, you say it's kind of a soft, mushy idea. My whole beginning of the book is kind of about proving out the bottom line impact, how trust affects the bottom line more than anything. But to get to the question, it's a confident belief in, a confident expectation, a confident faith. But, you know, simply, it's confidence, confident belief.
Okay, so let's talk about some of that ROI. Obviously, to middle managers, where the bottom line is important, but it's not our direct responsibility, perhaps. Talk to me about some of the ways that trust impacts and makes our lives easier.
Well, first of all, let's look. I would argue that for the middle manager, the bottom line is important, especially when it goes to, you know, productivity going up, stress going down, morale going up. I mean, all those things really do affect the bottom line, as much as people might think they're soft. Attrition of people you wanted to stay, you know, going down. Time to market getting shorter. Time for anything to get done. Boy, when there's more trust, innovation goes up, creativity goes up, costs go down. And so I would argue that it does have a huge impact. And just to first start by seeing that impact, because it is interesting. We can talk about productivity, we can talk about some of those other things, but it is interesting to see when costs go down. You know, I argue all the time that trust is not a soft skill. In fact, a lack of trust is your biggest expense. And I can prove it out by researching some of those things, but just simply to think about it, think about people like Tiger Woods, you know, a breach of trust or 25 breaches of trust. You know, and he lost millions in a couple of weeks, hundreds of millions by now. Your credit score, if you own your own home or vehicle, it's a trust score. The more the bank trusts you, the less you pay over the course of the loan, normally by thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. A supplier you trust, one calls enough. A supplier you don't trust, many calls, a bunch of brain stress later, you don't get what you wanted. What about in your team? Boy, where you trust someone, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, but remotely, when you can trust someone, they're just going to deliver. You know that that person's always doing what they're going to do. You don't think about them. You don't worry about them. But that remote group over there, you wonder if they're actually going to deliver. Are they really working, or are they just, you know, surfing the web? Then worry goes up. Time gets taken away. Stress goes up. Morale goes down, you know, skepticism goes up, and that all costs in the bottom line. So, and just in stress and in morale and in all these other ways that ultimately affect productivity, the bottom line, and the enjoyment of working for a given group or organization or team.
Well, you're right. All that stuff is true. So if we're talking about trust, and we know that it's important, what is trust made up of? I mean, how does it, we know, you know, on a gut level, we know what it looks like.
Yep. Maybe I can answer that. First of all,
I would presume I had actually asked a question, but you're smart enough to know where I was going.
Hey, I know where you're going. I know where you're going. Basically, first I'll define this confident belief in, okay, let's assume that affects managers, work groups, and confidence, and, you know, in the book or in a longer session, we could talk about that. But you and I both know intuitively, and your managers know, yeah, you know what, I like to be on teams where we trust each other. I like to be married to someone I trust. I like to work for someone that trusts me and that I trust, and I like it when trust is high, and we understand that that's a better work environment, that we can see pretty quickly without maybe all the research how cost could go down and time could shrink to get things done, productivity can go up and all that. So how do you build that? Well, that's what, you know, in 2003, when I kind of had the epiphany of what's unique about the greatest leaders, managers, brands of all time, they're the most trusted, and what then does it take to build that trust? I started my graduate research about this exact piece, and of course then the book came out of that. I was, you know, first of all, there was a lot of research on what destroys trust, but there wasn't a lot on what are these things. And you might think, oh, it's a simple idea, but there wasn't a lot on what really does build a trusted manager, a trusted salesperson, a trusted leader, a trusted organization. And so basically after the research in, you know, 05, 06, 07, and now, you know, I'm really on the front lines continuing the research in my consulting and speaking and writing and researching. But basically these eight pillars rose to the top. These eight, I call them pillars, but they're really just uniquenesses of the most trusted leaders, brands, managers, organizations, those that built this confident belief and those that had this distinct advantage I call the trust edge. So, you ready for the eight?
Give them to us real fast and we'll have the full list because we're not going to get to all of them.
Yep, no we won't. Okay,
rattle them off. I bet you can do it.
Here they are. Clarity. People trust the clear, mistrust the ambiguous. Compassion. This is, speaks to the ability that, you know, we trust those that can think beyond themselves. Character. Some people think this is the only one. You know, it's like, oh, of course, I trust people with high character, honesty. The truth is I might trust Wayne, you, because of your character. I might trust you with my kids for the weekend, let's say. But I will not trust you to give me a root canal because of the next pillar, competency. You're not competent at that specific thing. We need to be competent at the place we're going to be trusted. Commitment. We find people trust Harley Davidson and Apple and American Doll because of their commitment to their customers, which built a fan base of commitment back to them. Connection, this ability to connect with people and collaborate. Contribution, that speaks to the idea that, you know what, I trust contributors. I need people to get results. I can have someone that's real compassionate with high character, but if they don't give me results at the end of the day, I won't trust them. However, if they get the results in the wrong way without compassion or character, I also won't trust them over time. And consistency is the final pillar. And that's the king of all the pillars. We trust people that are consistent. I mean, if you're the same for good or bad, if you're always late, I trust you to be late. I trust McDonald's because they give me the same burger in Frankfurt, Tokyo, and Cleveland. I might not even like McDonald's, but I trust them because they deliver the same thing. It smells, looks, and tastes the same. We don't like surprises. We want sameness, and we trust consistency. It's the only way to build a brand, only way to build a reputation is being the same every time. Not, you know, you even someone who's brilliant once, okay, that was neat, but they're gone tomorrow.
Now, there's a couple of things. There's a whole bunch, obviously, in what you said. There's a couple of things I want to drill down to. One is the notion of, and you've got a lovely matrix in your book of how trust is built or destroyed between time and depth. Explain that matrix to me, if you would.
Well, it's an interesting correlation. It was hard to, that was a really, probably the hardest couple pages to write because I wanted this book to be so simple and easy to read and usable and yet, you know, get to some of the deep ideas around trust. But basically, there's this relationship of depth and time. Of course, the longer I have a relationship, the longer I see consistency, the deeper my trust goes because I see, oh, he's that way, this, and oh, and that way. Oh, and in that circumstance, he also stays that, tells the truth. Oh, even when he's under pressure, he does it. Oh, now I've seen enough. Now my trust goes way up. However, over time, if I see sporadicness or, you know, that kind of thing, then I lose trust. So in one way, trust is like a forest, a long time in growing. However, a touch of carelessness can burn the whole thing down, can't it? We see it happen all the time. Another side of this time and depth is I can gain trust quickly through something we call transfer trust. And that would be if I trust Wayne and Wayne trusts Joe and Wayne says Joe is trustworthy, then I might trust Joe quite deeply right away, immediately. Another way that time and depth interact in trust is that even if I have trusted, if I've trusted you deeply over time, there is a truth that with a touch of carelessness or you do one thing wrong, you breach trust, it might throw the whole thing out the window. But normally, if for over long time, you've been very consistent and then you breach trust once, usually by accident or with pure intent, I will give you the benefit of the doubt. So if you've really grown trust deeply over time, you can even make a mistake, one, and it will be you know, given grace because you were so consistent over time. I know that was so out of the norm for you. Something happened, something odd, and I will still trust you. So it's interesting. It interacts. You could say, well, it's that's the opposite of what you just said, where a touch of carelessness can you know waste the whole thing. But both are true.
Well, both are true because we're dealing with human beings. I was thinking about this as I was reading the book. I think people are either predisposed to trust or not. I tend to be a trusting human being and have the scars to prove it. On the other hand, I choose to live my life that way as opposed to being constantly on guard and constantly making myself crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but everybody has a default.
My dad said often, better to trust someone who's worthy of it than not trust someone at all. Now, you and I can both have been ripped off, and maybe that's not always the case, but there's some truth to that. The other thing it speaks to, your ability to trust others generally means you're quite trustworthy, because people that don't trust others often have a hard time trusting themselves. And there's reason for that, because they aren't trustworthy. They make, you know, New Year's resolutions every year that they never keep. And so they build on that not trusting themselves, so they don't think others could possibly be trustworthy because they themselves don't trust themselves and they don't know what it's like. And so it's interesting. It speaks to your trustworthiness that you have the ability to trust others, and I trust others more quickly than I ought too many times too, and have come to learn from that some. And I'm, by the way, just because I believe in the power of trust, I see it. I see productivity go up in teams and the bottom line go up and all that, does not mean I believe you should trust everyone. So my main point is that we should be most trusted when we become the most trusted manager, leader, you know, lawyer, whatever. We become most successful and we have the greatest impact. Doesn't mean we trust everyone else, but my point isn't for everyone else. It is for the reader, the learner, the leader that I'm working with. We need to become most trusted.
Let's say that you have just taken over a new team. What
yes.
are some of the first things that a leader should do to create an atmosphere of trust and, you know, get things off on the right foot?
Yeah, absolutely. I would start with pillar number one. Pillar number one is clarity. It is the easiest to do, and yet is one, when I go consult or speak in organizations, it is one of the ones I see so quickly is not there. People are not really clear. They say, oh, they have a vision statement or something, but they're not really clear about the vision for that team. They're not, and a vision, even though you might once again say, well, that's kind of a soft idea. No, it's absolutely very powerful. It's motivating. It's unifying to a team. It gets the bullets going the right direction in a war. It's very important, because that really can build morale and build productivity. And whether you're leading one person or leading millions of thousands of people, 250,000 like FedEx, a clear, absolutely crystal clear vision of where you're headed is very important for the manager. And I think, you know, that's the ongoing thing for the manager to ask the three questions, you know, where am I going and how am I going to get there? Whether that's your first day on or every quarter as you keep navigating as a manager, but being clear about where you're headed and how you're going to get there, that is so unifying and so motivating. So the first thing I would do is be clear. Now, there are people that come in and share the sweeping vision and they do nothing to back it up. They don't give their team the resources to back it up. And of course, that's a trust killer. But first, you know, share the vision, then back it up with resources and the other pillars.
Now, you and I were talking offline, and we're actually going to go into this in a little bit more depth on the Connected Manager blog in a week or so. So folks can look for that. But you know, it's not like we have done a really terrific job of this over the years in a work environment. And now, you know, we're not all working in the same location. We don't bump into each other over a cup of coffee. We're working remotely. We're working mediated through technology.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the challenges unique to remote teams in building and maintaining trust?
It's very challenging, and it certainly there is more trust that goes with getting a handshake with someone and getting to see their nonverbal cues over coffee, and those things are important. So number one, I would say where it is possible, it is worth getting people together sometimes. So I recommend with staff that hardly ever see each other, even at an annual conference, in-person meetings are still the best place to create buy-in. Buy-in for the sales goals, buy-in for the strategic plan, buy-in for the vision, buy-in, whatever. In person, you there's something that is very motivating and encouraging and important about in-person where it's possible. In the midst of that, I have virtual people. Certainly, we work with virtual people. It's so easy to do. There's a you know there's lots of positives with that. So what would I, you know, a few recommendations. One is especially at the beginning, consistent communication. Now, once you build trust more and more and more, and you just know they're going to deliver that way, and you know that's all you need to send, and you know that's all you need to say, it becomes easier. But consistent communication, if let's say you're the virtual person and your boss doesn't reach out to you all that often, they still at the beginning would love to see you say, oh, you're this far on the project, now you're this far, giving updates, because there's this skepticism that goes with the virtual idea of, are you really getting the work done? Are you on pace? Are we going to get to the end of this project and you just didn't even do it? You were just surfing the net the whole time. So they like to hear more consistent communication, and they like to, you know, hear progress reports more. At the end of the day,
I want to stop you there. I want to stop you there for a minute because there's something really important, and longtime listeners to this show have heard me say this before, so forgive me, folks. One of my failings as a manager, and because we tend to manage the way we like to be managed, is I have gotten my nose bloodied in the past by, you know, I like to be pretty much left alone and no news is good news. So these are all big people. And because I trust them, I'm not going to check up on them, you know, all the time. And I'm not going
right.
And what happens is that what to me is a sign of trust, which is if you need something, you know where I am, is often perceived as ignoring people or not
yep.
caring enough. And
yep.
it's funny because it's coming from a pure place. I swear it is. But
yep.
it has been known to backfire. And so
absolutely.
What you said about being proactive and perhaps over-communicating, we can't stress that enough.
Wayne, I have the same issue. I want to just trust them, and I hired competent people, and I want to know, you're just going to get it done. You let me know if you have issues or whatever. But I have learned, and also there's a personality issue here. Some people need more. Some people you just can see they can do it on their own. They want to do it on their own. But you only learn that by starting with more communication. And that's the way to squelch the problem to start with. You know, to answer the point, I agree with you 100% on that. But the other piece that the virtual person needs to know is they're really going to be trusted, especially based on their results, because we cannot micromanage. We cannot know if you're getting this done or that done or how fast you're getting it done or, you know, how much time you have on it. So we are really, let's say I'm the manager. I'm really trusting you to give me the results. I hope you have the other pillars. I hope you're doing them, living them out. But the results are king in that virtual case, because that's exact, you know, you're paying for exact results. So there needs to be even more communications. For instance, if you're working hard, you're doing everything expected, but the project all of a sudden is going to take a lot longer for some unforeseen reason, and yet you've given more than the time you said and all that, you've got to really let me know ahead of time and why. So, you know, to put those hand in hand. But results become much more important in this online type of work environment, virtual
wow.
environment.
Indeed. Now, let's ask the really ugly question. Something has happened to break the trust, whether it's
mm-hmm.
accidental, whether it's
yep.
on purpose, or whether somebody just in fact acted like a weasel.
Yep.
Something has happened.
Yep.
How do you go about rebuilding trust?
Interestingly, I have a whole chapter in the book on rebuilding trust.
You don't say.
Yeah, from small to big. But let's answer it simply in this podcast, the number one takeaway, and that is, you'll never rebuild trust unless you can make and keep a commitment. You got to be able to make a promise and keep it. So if you're keeping, look, this is what happened last week or a couple weeks ago when the Dow went down, you know, 600 plus points in a day. And of course, it's still very volatile. But our president got on and gave this confidence building speech. And what happened after that? It went down 200 more points. Now, what's the deal? It didn't build the confidence they hoped for. Why? Because out of Washington, on both sides, both parties, there's this blame this, do that, say that, and there's a lot being said, but little being done. And we want to see someone make a promise and keep it. We want to see someone be authentic and say, you know what, part of this was my fault. If anybody's been in any marriage, they know it wasn't all the other person's fault. Let's take some responsibility instead of getting on right after that and the Bachman says it's an Obama downgrade, and Obama says it's a Tea Party downgrade, and everybody quickly gets on to position themselves. But we want to see someone say something and actually mean it. And that's the same for a middle manager. That's the same for a virtual worker. If you do breach trust, the only way to build it back is to say, you know what? I am sorry. I want to make a commitment to you. I promise. I'm going to get this done by 4 o'clock tomorrow. It's going to be better than you expected. Give me a chance. And if they give you another chance, you deliver more than expected or as expected, you will start to build that trust. But it doesn't matter if it's in a marriage where someone walked out, or if it's in business, or as a virtual worker, or as a manager. The only way to start the rebuild of trust is to make and keep a commitment. And I don't care if you're BP on an oil spill, or if you're, you know, at home and have one person you're managing from your basement office. So that's the basics. There are steps and levels to all kinds of ways to rebuild trust. One other idea I might say is you've got to magnify the 8 pillars. So where you did them this much, you've got to do them more. So you got to be more consistent, higher character, more. If you breach trust, you've got to go out of your way to be even more clear, even show more commitment, even work extra hours, you've got to go above and beyond on all 8 pillars if you breach trust and actually want to rebuild it. And that's okay, you know?
Great stuff. The book is The Trust Edge, How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results, Deeper Relationships, and a Stronger Bottom Line. The website is thetrustedge.com. David's blog is there, and all sorts of good resources. David, who do you read?
I read a lot. I read some of the kind of hip, stuff that everybody's reading just because everybody talks about it. Seth Godin, the Heath Brothers, From Made to Stick. I teach in organizational leadership, so I read some more academics, let's see, Deep Change and the Kotter leading Change type stuff, and some of the Harvard Business School stuff. I like to see what's happening there, and The Economist. I even like Forbes quite a lot, just to see, some of the insights and ideas coming out in those realms. I have a voracious reader for an associate here, Reed Velo, and he's always, saying, oh, you got to check this. Oh, look at this article. Oh, look at that. So there's a variety that I'm looking at all the time. But, Kotter, yeah, I have several different people that I kind of am touching with and looking to, and new stuff that's coming out too. Harvey McKay just asked me to read his new book coming out, so I'm looking at his McKay MBA book and some other things. But it's a variety. I'm not tied to just one, that's for sure.
Well, loving that. David, thank you so much for being with us on the Cranky Middle Manager Show today, man.
Well, I really appreciate it, Wayne. What a treat to be with you. And, boy, for all you managers out there and your teams, I really hope you gain this what I think is the greatest advantage of all time, if you don't have it already, the Trust Edge.
And that was, believe it or not, the 294th edition of the Cranky Middle Manager Show. Thanks for joining us. Please share us with your friends, maybe the nice lady in HR who's looking for resources. You can follow our blog on www.theconnectedmanager.com, which is also on management issues. You can check out our resources for online presenters and managers at www.greatwebmeetings.com. And probably the easiest thing to do is follow us on Twitter. Great Web Meeting, singular, is the name. For now, I'm Wayne Trammell. I do trust you'll join us for the next episode. Have a great day. Don't let the weasels get you down.